Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Christopher Vick, Vice President of Engineering at Lemurian Labs, bringing over three decades of experience from top tech companies such as Qualcomm, Oracle, and Sun Microsystems. Throughout his distinguished career, he has played a key role in the developing technologies used by billions. Notably, Vick led the creation of software development tools for Qualcomm's 5G modems and was one of the original developers of the Hotspot Java virtual machine at Sun Microsystems. In his role at Lemurian Labs, he drives engineering strategy focusing on creating innovative solutions to make IA development more efficient, accessible, and performance-driven. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
First question we like to ask our guests, Chris, is how did you originally get into semiconductors? Do you have a story you can share?
Sure. I originally was trained as an attorney. I went to Columbia Law School, and I decided that I really didn't enjoy that. But I was programming computers back early PCs, the compact portable and the like, in the evenings for fun. So I decided to switch tasks and move into computer science and went to Rice University and studied compilers there.
Yeah, that's a good story. You've had an incredible career across Qualcomm, Oracle, and Sun Microsystems. Can you share some of the most transformative technologies you've developed and how they've shaped the industry?
Sure. I guess the first one was really the Hotspot Java virtual machine. I was one of the original authors of the optimizing compiler in Hotspot. And that was transformational for a couple of reasons. The biggest one being that it made programming much more reliable, made software vastly more reliable, and that changed the nature of software for decades. Java, after Hotspot came out, Java became the number one programming language in the world for 20 years consecutively. And that was principally based on the fact that the defect rates programming in Java were vastly lower than they were in C++ or other languages.
Interesting. And what convinced you to come out of retirement and join Lemurian Labs? And why do you believe democratizing AI development is so crucial today?
So I believe that there's a fundamental change to productivity every time you make a major step forward in technology. And when you are able to, you know, spread a technology like AI to a large percentage of the population so that they can actually make effective use of it, you increase individual productivity. And by doing that, you increase the size of the pie. You basically grow the economy. And by growing the economy, you make everyone better off. So it's a wonderful opportunity. It's an opportunity that also happened with the Qualcomm 5G modem and with Java from Sun. So it's a really cool idea to be able to do this a third time. The other thing was I discovered when I actually interviewed with Jay, our CEO, that the basic plan that they have is one that was very closely related to one that I had pitched to a former employer. And, you know, they were not motivated to do it because, of course, they were interested in lock-in for their silicon. And, our plan really tends to not for lock-in at the hardware level in that way.
I agree with you completely. Lemurian Labs is an infrastructure company, which typically means that hardware is a core product, but you've taken a software first approach. Why is that?
I think there's a few key insights. The first one is you simply can't take advantage of hardware without a solid software platform. If you build a chip and you don't have the software support for it and people don't know how to utilize the chip, it becomes a doorstop, which doesn't do anything good for anyone. I also think that in AI today, particularly in the large scale areas, the principal problems are actually in utilization. And so they're system-wide problems, not individual core problems. So making a faster, processing core to do matrix multiplies and the like is not really going to speed things up. You have to first fix the biggest problems that exist in these systems: data movement, bandwidth problems, data layout problems. If you can't fix those problems, building a faster, accelerator won't actually make any difference and it won't help anyone. So we've got plans for a better accelerator, but to make those plans actually give benefit to people, we first have to solve the hardware and the system problem. I think also there's a common misconception that hardware is the hard part of solving any problem, and that's generally not really true. There's a lot more software than there is hardware, and it tends to be bigger and more complicated. That's not to say that hardware isn't difficult to design and build. I've been on both sides of that fence, and they're both difficult and they have their own special challenges, but it's a mistake to think that only hardware matters, because that hasn't been true and certainly isn't true in the machine learning space.
I agree, especially with AI. So can you explain why software is critical as AI models scale and how it will make development more efficient?
Sure. When you think about scaling models, you run into some very, very large problems about programming big distributed systems. And programming big distributed systems has always been difficult. The HPC guys have struggled with it for decades now. And it's also a big struggle for large server systems that are used in finance and other things. So one of the things that we did in Java software was tailor Java to be effective on very, very large systems. And part of that solution involved not only generating efficient code and using good processors, but it also involved, careful orchestration at runtime. So one of the things that is really critical to solving the problems of scaling of AI workloads is also sort of managing execution of the system. If you can't keep all of the compute elements busy, if you can't effectively use all the resources, which includes, memory, bandwidth, storage, as well as the processing cores, then you won't be effective and you won't be able to scale these models up to the levels that they need to be scaled to. It currently is costing a tremendous amount of money to train a large language model, and it takes months. And these are the kinds of problems that the HPC guys have struggled with, like say, for decades. And so I think there's a lot of technologies that exist outside of the AI space that need to be applied effectively in order to enable this kind of scaling.
Can you walk us through your role in developing the software tools for Qualcomm's microprocessors in 5G modems? What lessons from that experience are you applying at Lemurian Labs?
So at Qualcomm, I worked on jointly developing the instruction set architecture and the high-level architecture of a microprocessor that was used in the 5G modems, and also working on the compilers, linkers, all the software development tools for that processor. The key things that I learned there was that you really need to tailor not only the hardware to the specific nature of the problem that you're solving, in that case, a communication system, but also the software. So you have to really think about all of the complex problems that need to be solved. And some of those actually exist in the hardware design and in the system design, and some of them exist in the software design. So being able to combine expertise in both hardware and software, being able to pull together a complete system design, understanding where the bottlenecks are, where the problems exist, regardless of whether they sit in the system, the software, or the cores, is crucial to creating a successful system for a very, specific technical domain. So as I say, in that case, it was communications. In this case, it's AI.
Right. Well, Lemurian Labs seems to have taken on a massive problem. What makes you believe that you are the best position to deliver a solution versus all the other companies out there, both the well-established ones and the startups?
So I think there are a few things that we have as advantages, and probably the most important is the key insight that you can't solve the problem just by building a faster accelerator, that you need to approach the problem from a broad systems perspective. And that is what led us to slow down the development of our hardware and focus on a software stack that could effectively generate good code for a variety of accelerators, and at the same time, actively manage the execution of the the codes across large systems. So when you really think about where problems exist in the current systems, they're existing in low utilization, long time to solutions. And in order to solve the utilization problems, you really need to approach things like scheduling and effective utilization of the memory subsystem, effective utilization of bandwidth. In particular, you know, on many of these systems, bandwidth tends to be the most limited resource. So often you have a lot more compute power available in your accelerators than you can effectively take advantage of. So in order to really solve this problem, you have to look at it as a broad systems problem. And the other people don't seem to be doing that right now.
Got it. So what excites you most about your work at Lemurian Labs? And what are the next big milestones the company aims to achieve?
I'm terribly excited about, you know, an opportunity to really orchestrate the development of a fundamental change in technology, something that don't get a lot of chances to do in a career, and I've been very fortunate to do it a couple times in the past. It's a great opportunity. I'm working with a great team of engineers. They have good insights. They understand the problems that we're facing. They're tackling the right set of problems and going after really making AI available to a much broader part of the population, and doing that by reducing the cost of dealing with these large models and with inference and training. So I feel like machine learning in particular has an opportunity to really have a huge impact, because it gives a large segment of the population access to information and quality information and understanding of information that they have not had. It builds upon the changes that happened in the communications revolution of the last 15, 20 years by not only giving you access to information, but allowing you to actually make use of it. So right now there's so much information you can find on the web, but you have no idea what's good, what's bad, how to actually find the bits and pieces that you need or that are relevant to solve your particular problem. I think machine learning is an area that allows us to sort through all that information using computers, which computers are good at, and then boil it down into a small enough set of information that human beings can effectively make use of it. And I think this is going to transform the way that people work and the way that our economy operates. So it's a very exciting opportunity.
Yeah, I've met Jay, your CEO, very charming and very smart man. I do think you guys have the right team for this. Final question, how do you engage with your customers normally?
So we have a number of engagement models. We attend conferences regularly and you know, reach out to people. We have a website that people can reach us on. And we also obviously, you know, go and reach out to specific companies that we think might be interested in what we're doing. In addition, you know, people can always reach out to Jay or myself. Our emails are on our website. You know, let us know if you're interested in the technologies, and we'll be happy to help you.
That's great. Thank you very much, Chris, for your time. And I look forward to meeting you sometime. You do go to the conferences, I'm sure. I'm sure we'll hook up at some point in time.
That would be great. I would really enjoy that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.